listening to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a show about data networking, TCP/IP, data centers, wireless, security, routing, switching, and all that sort of good stuff. That's us. You get the idea. And home base for us is packetpushers.net, where you can listen to our podcasts and read blogs by a large group of independent network engineers from all over the world. The show is, of course, free, and you can subscribe via RSS or through iTunes. Contact the show through email via packetpushers@gmail.com. And I am Ethan Banks, your host today. You can follow me on Twitter at ECBanks, and I blog at packetpushers.net. Joining me today to discuss the very hot topic of BYOD, bring your own device, is Mrs. Y, Michelle Chiburka, Blake Crony, Troy Martin, and Greg Farrow. And let's start out with Mr. Greg. Greg, how are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm starting to get back to a semblance of normal life after our San Diego festival.
Yes.
our festival of content. We blogged, we published, we did all sorts of things, didn't we?
And yeah, it was a little bit of the All Cisco, All the Time channel for a bit there. I went back and done a blog post about it. Nine shows in total tied to that show in one way or the other. But it was a good time.
It was. It was a great experience. But I'm still putting things back together in the real world at the moment, struggling to find some balance between podcasting and working life. So I may be quiet for some weeks to come while I get things sorted back out on those levels.
Well, one of the things you did to help with that, because we were sitting there right in that conference room that that we were recording in at Cisco Live, you ordered yourself a MacBook Pro with Retina, and you've got it in front of you this very moment, do you not?
Well, yes. Not only did I get an MVP, the Pro with the Retina, which is kind of – it's amazing. To be honest, you look at the screen and you sit there and go, how did I ever not use this before? It's pretty stunning. It's like looking at a piece of printed paper. Seriously, you cannot see – like I didn't think – I wasn't a big thing about the Retina. What I really wanted was the 16 gigs of memory because I use Parallels in my Mac to do for Visio. The only Windows thing I run is Parallels so that I can have Visio going for those sites that need to have that. Oh, my goodness. Well, see, here you go. Here's a thing for you. My daughter's gone to a party down somewhere with some friends from her school, and apparently she's in the same beach house. Prince Harry is there as well.
Thank you for that.
When Hugh Jackman shows up, could she give me a call?
And that voice right there was our very own Mrs. Y, Michelle Chiburka. And how are you doing?
I just want to say I am not absolutely green with envy that Greg has his MacBook before I got mine.
And by not, you mean you are.
And I you know, and he didn't rub my nose in it or laud it over any of us. He was very restrained, even though I wanted to scream when I found out that he already had one. So I'm right currently. I'm finally recovering from I was one of the lucky few in the Mid-Atlantic region who were hit by that horrible storm on Friday evening that took out Amazon Web Services and killed Netflix. And I've been without power since I got it back on July 4th. And then also struggling with my existential crisis, which arose due to the leap second issue that came up.
Why did your life get longer without planning for it?
Did you hear how much how much difficulty that caused for Unix systems around the planet? It was NTP just couldn't deal with it. It's like, what? More than 60 seconds in a minute? No. That's just not right.
It does. I find it amusing that it was only Linux and Unix that was affected, because that's unexpected at you know.
Well, Windows, you reboot it every 3 hours. So, was affected, nobody noticed.
Well, there was a lot of big services down too. So a lot of a lot of applications failed, like Pinterest, and like I didn't even notice because I don't use any. I don't use any of that shite.
I still don't get what Pinterest does. Okay, maybe I'm retarded, but I don't know.
Well, Michelle, it is very, very much a great pleasure to have you back on the program again and to hear your smiling voice. Can voices smile? I've just decided that they can. Yes, to hear your smiling voice.
Wait, no, it's like Tyra Banks says, I'm smizing.
Okay. No, I definitely don't know what that means. Joining us from Canada, way up there in Saskatchewan, I believe you said, is Mr. Troy Martin.
Yes, that's right. I'm up in the middle of the boonies in Saskatchewan, where I had to drive 15 kilometers just to get cell phone reception so I could dial into this call.
I mean, is there a part of Saskatchewan is not the boonies?
Well, generally it's pretty flat, except for the one hill that's between me and the cell tower.
Is this where we stop and start making the Canadian jokes?
So, Troy, this is the first time you've been on the show, so why don't you tell the folks a little bit about yourself and maybe your Twitter account and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work in the Wi-Fi industry. I'm a consultant, as generic as that sounds. But I support customers having troubles and customers who want to do new Wi-Fi deployments. And so the topic of today is near and dear to my heart. But you can follow me on the Twitter at Troy Mart, just like Walmart, only better.
Very good. Last but not least, Blake Crony. Blake, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well, sitting in a piece together office as I demolished my actual office due to a little water damage. It's been great times, great times.
Water damage? What happened?
You know, we never turn on the AC, and go figure the first time we turn on the AC because it's actually a little warm up here. And sure enough, the condenser pipe broke. I'm sure I broke it when I changed the water heater. So it managed to get water all over my carpet and everything. Just a little bit of drip from the condensation was enough to soak up and ruin a lot of things. I'm fine with it. It gives me a good excuse to remodel and build a new office.
Well, there you go. No, you were before the show that you'd been on the road a good bit.
Oh, yes. I think I've had more check-ins in airports the last 4 or 5 weeks than I've had anywhere else. If you follow my Twitter and Foursquare feed, it's been a lot of travel. So I'm actually happy to be home for the next, 2 weeks until travel starts up again. So it was fun, you know, joining you guys out there at San Diego for Cisco Live. We definitely had a lot of fun out there through all of us, and a lot of good material came out of that show.
Yeah. Yeah, and Blake and I, you guys listened to show 110, which we did, which was live from the Social Media Lounge at Cisco Live. Blake and I were in the middle of a crowd of people sitting on couches and standing around with our microphones running from person to person as they had something to say. It was, I felt a little bit like Oprah, Jerry Springer, I don't know, something like that. Oh, so-and-so has an opinion, let's run over here. What do you have to say, sir?
Yeah, no, I think of you more like Phil Donahue.
Maybe.
I was gonna go with maybe an Anderson Cooper or something like that, because I don't look like Oprah, and I definitely don't want to be Jerry Springer. So I'm not going to go down that route. But, yeah, that's a good poke at me. I need to get my material up from that show as well over at the No Strings Attached show, which is the podcast for wireless engineers that I work on.
That's a great podcast.
Yeah, that is I forgot your official URL, nsashow.com?
Yep, nsashow.com, and as well as nostringsattachedshow.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining. And why don't we get into the conversation today? Just to give the listeners a little bit of background on why we're doing a show on BYOD. Well, it's a hot topic, obviously, so if that wasn't reason enough, I did this tweet during – I think it was actually during Cisco Live, because I was just a little bit wound up about the whole notion of bring your own device, which is the notion – you own your own personal device, an iPhone, a tablet, you're at a company that is a Windows shop, but you want to use your Mac, so you want to bring that, and you expect to be able to use it, have access to work resources, have access to your employer's network through this device, and it's not owned or managed by the employer, it is managed and owned by you. And I am at where I am working, we are evaluating BYOD and looking at it. It's a big challenge. Depending on your perspective, it's a big challenge. And this is where it got a little hairy on Twitter. I tweeted out in frustration that BYOD is kind of, I think I put it, it's a corporate evil. It's an entitlement mentality. We shouldn't be encouraging it. And then, of course, that is the one tweet that it got all sorts of attention. People were responding to me either in agreement or disagreement. It was a very polarizing tweet. And then I had followed up with a second tweet saying, yes, I don't love BYOD, but I understand that, you know, we need to be able to support it to try to, you know, temper the nerd rage that went into the first tweet. But, but it was too late. The argument had
nerd
kind
rage.
Of,
yeah.
Well, I am going to make the case against it, because I believe that BYOD will be crucified on the rack of reality. and has zero chance of getting anywhere.
I'm going to have to, coming from an EDU background, I'm going to come from the real world, which is that BYOD is here to stay. It's not going anywhere.
You know, and I completely agree with that. If you look at it, let's take a look at BYOD as a whole. This isn't a new thing. In the EDU market, they've been dealing with this ever since laptops and desktops were prevalent in the homes, and people were bringing them to their dorm rooms. I've worked in the EDU as well, and it is always a struggle, yes. But you have to do it in certain markets. And now we're just finally starting to see that there are benefits in the enterprise space. So it's kind of an interesting trade-off. It's where it's been there forever. Now all of a sudden it's hit a couple of the, you know, it's hit the Forrester and it's hit the Gartner. So all of a sudden it's like, ooh, buzzword, shiny object.
Yes. Like, it's funny that you put it that way, that it's, you know, there's value to be gained from BYOD, because my gut response is there isn't necessarily value to be gained. And I've heard some of the arguments that explain why it's a good thing. But to me, it's just, it's a nuisance. Here I am. I'm at my company, which is a mid-sized company. I do the vast majority of the networking. It's me and another guy. We deal with all of it for the company. I deal with the security side and I deal with the infrastructure side, both the wireless and the wired stuff. And now it's like, okay, so how can I securely admit these devices onto the network? And to me, it strikes me as mostly a convenience thing. I don't get the value add proposition for the most part.
I don't think the discussion anymore is – I don't think it's an option anymore. I mean, the reality is that people are – they're so plugged in now. And they have so many – I mean, how many people have iPads, iPhones – Android devices, you know, it's like 24/7. That's a part of your life. I mean, it's, you know, I made a reference to it in the notes that Andy Clark, who is this neurophilosopher, talks about a concept called extended mind, where the tool becomes a feedback loop and actually is extended mind. And it's the users see that as not a device. They see it as they feel it seems like entitlement to us, but what's really going on is that they think of that as them. They're identified with it, and it's just an extension of how they work. And for us to fight it, I think we're going to lose, because it's just too – it's an emotion. There's emotional content there. There's identification there that we're just not going to be able to win that battle.
Troy, what are the business drivers that you're seeing as you're dealing with your customers and doing BYOD deployments?
Well, I thought it was interesting. I think if I recall correctly, when your tweet came out, you mentioned that you asked the question, should IT be driving this? And I think that the real drivers should be, you know, come from a business perspective and from a people services or HR perspective, because that's where the, you know, the part, the real win for BYOD comes from.
Yeah, I think I know. Yeah, I said IT should not be encouraging it, I think is what I said. Yeah.
And IT should be implementing the solution, but it should be driven from the business and people services. Like, if you allow people to bring in the device that they feel that's attached to them, an extension of themselves, if you let them bring in the device that they're comfortable with, if you can even save, you know, 10 minutes of productivity improvements throughout the day, you know, add that up to a large company across the year. Like, there's significant productivity savings that you can get. It also improves the morale of people working in the office if they're happier working on their device of choice. If the, you know, the Mac lovers get to use their Mac device, the Windows zealots get to keep using their Windows-based platform. Any Linux, Unix operators out there, they get to use their OS of choice. It lets them be more productive, and it makes them happier doing their day-to-day activities. So there's a lot of gains from that perspective.
Well, Colin McNamara, we had hoped to get on the show, and we couldn't, weren't able to get him on for this time slot. But Colin made kind of that argument too. Now, he deals with trying to recruit people and bring people into his firm. Colin McNamara, if you don't follow him on Twitter, at Colin McNamara, he is at a, I want to say it's a consulting firm, and he is needing to acquire and bring talent on board, and made the point to me that he's talking to people who, if they can't do BYOD, they don't want to work for them. That's like a non-starter for them. And Greg, I mean, I think you've somewhat made that point with your Mac, because you consult as well.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of problems here. One is I can take my Mac into a company, but Most of my consulting is with Fortune 100 firms in the FTSE 100, FTSE 250 companies in the UK. So they're all big. And they have mandatory policies which ban anybody from connecting a non-corporate desktop or laptop to the corporate network. So it's not even a discussion. I can't use it. I can bring it with me to do whatever it is I need, but I can't connect it to the corporate network.
So what do? Do they give you – they issue you one of their crap tops and then you have to struggle with that?
Yeah, I get a corporate crap top, which is full of corporate malware. You know, by the time the asset management system boots and then the malware and then the virus scanning and then the compliance software and then the group policy comes down and it's and then Exchange loads, then Word loads, and by then it's normally done. That's about all it's capable of doing.
And then how productive and how happy do you become using that?
I don't. I stick it on the desk and walk away from it, and I just continue to use my own desktop. I write in raw text and then export back into that in 9 times out of 10 because I'm not working in confidential. I've just come from working from a security-cleared system, and that was just – in fact, it was so bad I really – one of the reasons I quit the job was because the laptop was unusable. I was trying to write a report, which was 35,000 words long, which is, you know, like 60 to 100 pages sort of, you know, with diagrams. And the corporate malware that was on it, they had this malware, high security keyboard interceptor to keyboard decryptor. And every time you click the mouse key, it would actually click twice. And it was unfixable. It's just a known bug. And so because I work at speed, I'm actually typing faster than the security tools can let me run. Because I'm clicking on the mouse to do Visio, I actually click faster than the keyboard interceptor can run. And it would just – and I would be typing, and then all of a sudden it would delete all my text. And I just said, I can't work here because I can't – your tools are suboptimal.
You know, Greg, that's actually an interesting point, is you're going to the extent that you're saying that what was given to you was so overly controlled and overly managed that it hindered your productivity, and that's why you chose to bring a device. Now, at the same time, I kind of look at it from another aspect of it, is that those of us that travel, that are road warriors and we're always flying around here, there's been some interesting stats have been thrown around in the past few years in regards to laptops going missing, you know, through TSA, through airports, just in general. And most companies, they don't use any type of PGP encryption on their entire disks or very minimal security on their devices. If you look at it, you know, one of the stats that I had pulled up for a blog post I was working on was that they were saying that 12,000 laptops a week go missing in airports. And this was in 2008, so this is kind of older data. 1,200 at LAX alone.
Yeah.
And they also said that in 2008, only 87 items had been returned at the time of that survey being performed. If I have my own device and I'm carrying that through, you know, my MacBook Air, if I bring that with me, or my iPad, I have much closer eyes on those devices than I do if it was a corporate-owned asset, because I'm going to assume that it's just going to be replaced.
I don't think that's
right.
I find that argument hollow, right? I don't think that I don't think people value anything to do with their professional work, because the corporate IT values their IT so lowly. So most corporate IT is junk. It's configured as at the lowest possible cost for the least amount of effort and delivers the lowest possible function to users. Now, the thing that's driving BYOD is the fact that corporate IT is just so poor. You know, the devices we're given are so, you know, the accountants, the executives just sit there and say, well, let's cut some money out of the IT budget, and they have such a poor experience, is that BYD is actually being driven by the poor experience that the businesses have brought upon themselves, like workers who actually want to do well. You know, it's a moral hazard, right? They don't own them, they'll give them away. But when they have their own devices, they won't care either. They'll just say, oh, it's gone, I'll get another one and get it synced back up, and away they'll go. That won't change at all. Because people don't care now. People don't care.
Well, I've had this conversation. I have this conversation with non-IT people all the time, where I'll notice that, people at my Pilates studio or something, they don't have a password set on their cell phone. And I'll explain to them, you know, I'll say, well, why don't you have a password set? Well, what do I need one for? And then I'll give them a scenario. I'll give them a scenario of what's going to happen, and then I tell them the story about this study that Symantec did, where they planted cell phones out that appeared to be lost, and they wanted to see what people would do, how long it would take them to return them, and if they would snoop and check the email and things like that. And it was pretty bad. And so I tell them that story, and usually what happens is I find that those people then immediately set a password on their cell phones. So I think
Yeah, but look, you're changing one person at a time. Earlier this year, I worked for a company that had 15,000 employees, of which 6,000 were issued with laptops. And it was just, you know, the help desk wasn't able to cope with that many users as is, and they were already spending as much money as on the help desk as they could reasonably afford to do so as a percentage of business. It was like the laptops were vital to, you know, so many mobile stuff and all that sort of stuff. But they were not able to expend more money on making the laptops better because it just cost them so much already as a percentage of revenue. You know,
some of the Silicon Valley companies give their users a budget, and they say, this is what you get to spend every 3 years. And I am in agreement. I think if it's your hardware, you're going to be more likely to take care of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I disagree. I think people just don't—they don't care about their own hardware. They might care about it marginally more, but they're gonna—you know—the reason that most people don't care is because they're sitting on a laptop which is 3 years old and it runs like rubbish anyway. So if it gets lost, they just go and buy another one and say, "That's good. I got an excuse to buy another one."
There's a larger issue with people. So the people that are listening to this show are probably going to be more conscientious about security. They're going to care about whether it's their corporate laptop or whether it is their personal laptop or other device that they may have corporate information on. They will tend to, because they're more technical and more aware of the dangers that are out there, do common sense security things. There is the other sort of a user who is most of the rest of corporations who need the computer because they need their email and to write documents and whatever else they need to do, and they just expect it to work. It's a functional tool, and they don't care about it as such. And so I don't know that whether it's their personal laptop or their corporate laptop, if they're in the airport and it's got corporate data on it, the thought in their mind isn't, oh, my goodness, someone's going to steal my laptop and therefore information about my corporation is going to leak out that could be detrimental to my corporation doing business. They just don't care. They don't think that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was at a company that was a financial services company that ended up setting a data encryption on the hard drive across all corporate-owned machines just because there was such a rash of stolen laptops. It got to be, we just can't deal with this any other way. We've got to encrypt the contents that are on the hard drive because people just aren't conscientious enough about it.
Well, I think that's applicable for the home market too. I mean, if you buy a laptop, selling a laptop without disk encryption, isn't that the equivalent of selling a house without locks on the door?
Well, okay, so you're touching on my favorite topic. Why are we still buying such second-rate operating systems in 2012? Why is it that Microsoft has not been forced by customers to deliver a product that is actually worthwhile having?
Because the customers don't care. If it works, they're happy.
The customers here, Microsoft's customers, for example, Mac has this in a file vault. They have operating system encryption. Windows does not. You have to buy it as an aftermarket product, which doesn't work very well because Microsoft's crypto API has been astonishingly pass for the better part of 15 years until just recently when they rewrote it. It's actually moderately secure for a change. Why is the marketplace? I mean, you're sitting here saying make it the user's fault. Let's put it back onto Microsoft and our CEOs and our CIOs who are not going back to the suppliers and saying, why are you not giving me a secure product? Why are CIOs going back to Microsoft and buying more licenses and giving them more money and not demanding that these things get fixed?
I think I'm going to have to agree with Greg on that one. I don't even think hard drives – sell a hard drive with full disk encryption capabilities, hardware full disk encryption. I mean, you don't buy a car without locks. So why do we think – I mean – This is where we have to be in the security industry. We have to be evangelists, and we have to constantly educate people about the consequences of this. And, you know, it's going to get easier. And that way they will do it in their personal lives because it blends. I mean, you can't definitively draw that line anymore between the professional and the personal life. I mean, not only do devices overlap, but, you know, people are plugged in all the time. They, you know, are answering their personal email at work. Sometimes they're using both. So,
yeah. But well, let me ask you a different question about user data then. Let's assume that user data is actually valuable and that you have a corporate device, that you have your own device, and you decide to leave the company, and there's company data on there, but there's also your personal data on there, which is what a lot of people want. They want to be able to mix their professional lives and their personal lives into one device. Now, whether that's a laptop or more commonly it's a telephone, an iPhone or an Android phone, and when you leave the company is going to send out a command which is going to either wipe the laptop or wipe the iPhone. So, for example, with an iPhone, as soon as you connect your iPhone to an Exchange server, the corporation has the ability to wipe all data on the phone, wipe it clean.
Right.
So do you think that the ordinary sales grunt, you know, the woman who's in the mid-level of human resources, or the average accountant who's still hasn't quite gotten over the fact that calculators have been replaced with spreadsheets, they're still adapting. Do you think they're going to understand that? And how is that going to, when their personal data gets deleted from a device because they left the company and they didn't know, what's their response going to be? Lawsuits?
Well, that's exactly what's going to happen. But I think that brings into play, how do you properly use the BYOD and how do you provide solutions for it? Now, that's always been my biggest gripe on the iOS, Apple iOS products, is that it's all or nothing. You can't just delete your email. On an Android phone, it can just delete the email profile and the data associated with that. But I think if you're looking at a BYOD solution from a security standpoint, from a data integrity, a virtual infrastructure or Citrix-style infrastructure is definitely the way to go when you're talking about these solutions. That way you know your data, you know where it is, you know the integrity of it. And when you talk earlier about the help desk not being able to support 16,000 laptops or whatever that number was, if they're supporting 6,000 or 16,000 Citrix sessions, it's different than 16,000 individual license. Mm. I've come from that world where converting NT4 solutions over to a full Citrix, I can use any device and I can have, you know, 7 servers running those nodes. Mm. If I have to upgrade Microsoft Office, it's 7 upgrades. It's not 16,000. So I think it comes down to, what is our solution for that? The losing the personal data, it has to be an assumption. It has to be written into the policy, and it all comes down to policy on that side. If you bring your own device, here are the risks. Here's what you risk losing if we do a remote wipe on your phone. You're going to lose all your photos. You're going to lose everything.
The reason that Apple does that, in my view, and a little bit controversially, is that Apple says that our system to maintain their security. I mean, say what you want about Apple, but in the 5 years that they've been on the market, the first case of a malware app occurred in the App Store last week. But in the previous 5 years, there's been no viruses, no malware, no software that anybody has, that's gone public at least, has ever been seen on iOS platform. Not for the iPad, not for the iPhone, right? If the trade-off for that is the fact that you can only wipe the entire phone, it's an all or nothing, then that's a perfectly acceptable compared to Android, right? Android is a disaster from a security point of view. The vendors don't update the phones. There's still people out there running Android 2, which has got like over 250 vulnerabilities, known rootable vulnerabilities from a web page, 0 days, right? You've got people out there. Android phones are so insecure you can drive a truck through the security holes in that product. You cannot. There's no way I would let an Android phone be connected to my network, because I would basically be under attack immediately that one arrived, because all of those phones are basically rootable remotely.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've always said it to customers whenever anybody complains to me about wanting to put a Apple iPad on the network. I always say I want 3,000 iPads on the network instead of a single Windows machine or Android device.
Is that something?
I think Blake's bringing up a really good point about policy. I often find working with clients is everyone wants to dive into the technical solution and try to figure out, you know, which MDM platform am I going to use to manage policies and do profiling and push profiles to each particular smartphone device. When I think that the first step is to look at the policies as a corporation, what devices do you want to let onto your network? What devices do you not want to let onto your network? Are you comfortable with having corporate data stored on personal devices? And then what do you want to do to secure that? What is the risk if you were to lose
it? So let me come back to the policy. Let me get on my high horse again about policy, right? Do you really think with the way that management is running today, like I look at the managers in all the companies that I've worked with in the last 5 years, and they're so fumbling incompetent about IT policy that you can't rely on them to implement an IT policy that will actually work, right? As what's happening is management is blaming engineers for not being business savvy or not being able to provide the tools that makes technology easy to use. And I'm sitting there going, Hang on, Mr. Manager. You were supposed to take this policy and tell people what they can't do. Why did you not do that? Why haven't you gone out and done your job and told people what it is about policy? Why haven't you gone to the CEO and say, this is the way it is? Why haven't you gone to the accounting company and say, this is the restrictions we're putting in place and explaining why that is? We've got a real challenge in technology today around management and executives not providing the leadership to making technology work. So when you say to me, we have to come up with policy, I laugh. Because we haven't got managers who've got talents to be able to implement a policy.
The other problem with that is, how can we set policy when we don't even have data classification in most cases? If you ask most organizations, you know, what type of data they have, how do they classify it, what are the risk level associated with, you know, different types of data, they can't even, you know, how do you create a layered network security design if you don't even know what the data is and how, you know, what the risk is to each type of data?
That's not a technical failure, that's a management failure.
Yeah
that's our leaders, that's our technical leaders.
It ends up being that the managerial policy that is put in place for BYOD, for whether it's it ends up being the technical people that have to enforce that policy, because you can write a policy all day long and do your best to educate your user community about what your expectations as a corporation are of them as an employee, as they access the network, as they access documents, as they use devices. But at the end of the day, those people don't care. They're going to do what they're going to do if they can get away with it. Therefore, it becomes incumbent upon the IT people to provide a solution. So I think that maybe answers a bit of why there's so much of a focus upon the solution, because there's an assumption that the users are going to do what they're going to do. And I've read some surveys recently saying that people who, if they can get away with it, will flout the policy. They don't really care what the policy says. They're going to use their own device as long as they can get away with it, if they can find a way around it.
Sure. You
know, for example, the company that I deal with now, I know that it is not impossible for people who know enough about how to access the wireless network to get on it with their own device. There's not a thing I could do to stop them at the moment. I don't have a technical solution in place yet to prevent that. That's coming. We're going to do one. And there are written policies that say what people can or cannot access our network with. So, yeah, there's a management policy, there's a communications issue, but then there's also the technical side of it that is necessary for the enforcement of that policy.
Well, when management, it basically is in denial, which that's what I think the problem is. They don't want to deal with it because it's complex, and it means that you can't it's a different kind of relationship with your user community. All of a sudden you're talking to them as equals and not just resources. They're not things anymore. They're your partners. And I was reading a Harvard Business Review article the other day that talked about, you know, we talk a lot about making HR more engaged and partners in the process, but it still gets down to the HR group is sort of the CYA group that makes sure the organization doesn't get sued. And we need to sort of – there needs to be a better level of sophistication, and they need to be more evolved and part of the process. And, you know, then all these things like policy and data classification and, you know, engaging the user community, it happens. But in 90% of the cases, it isn't. You know, because they're just keeping the barbarians at bay.
Well, I mean, I haven't been in an organization where IT policy has been correctly enforced or reasonably developed. And I've been sitting there putting in technical controls to try and address that. And then I get blamed when the policy doesn't work properly. And what I'm starting to realize is that the failure of the tech is a lot of failures which are being pinned on technology are not, they're failures of executive leadership and of management process. So when we sit there and say, okay, well, we'll take this policy, we'll just make something up, we are actually setting ourselves up for failure, because the management can then blame us for not delivering something that worked. And you're sitting there going, hang on, I tried to, but you've got no way to defend yourself in that situation because you deployed something, right? And then it always comes down to, well, can't the technology fix this? And we need to stand up as like, if we're going to be business savvy engineers, we need to stand up and say to the executives, no, I cannot. The technology doesn't fix a failure of leadership. You, as an executive, you need to go and solve your management problem. You need to go and solve your people problem and give me a proper policy and give me damn fine management, please, instead of just blaming the technology for your shortcomings.
Well, how does a BYOD policy how do you think that that BYOD policy should be deployed then? I mean, it seems like the consensus of this group, we got Blake and Troy who consult in this space, and then the other three of us on this call actually work for corporations at a somewhat of a different level. Greg, usually like really long-term contracts and so on, and Michelle and I are permanently attached to our respective employers. Do you think that BYOD should be allowed just as a general principle? And then if so, how do you believe that those devices that are not corporate owned should be secured in a unique way, differently from a device that is corporately owned?
Let me propose what I proposed when I was at the university. I proposed a Chinese menu solution because we had a big problem here. I mean, we could not – I mean, it wasn't – sometimes it wasn't even that you didn't want to support certain devices. Sometimes it was that we physically could not support certain devices for different technical limitations. And so basically what I proposed was, okay, in this scenario, you know, you can do this. In this scenario, you can have access this way. And in this scenario, you can have access this way. If you don't like this, you've got these two choices, but here are the parameters for that.
Can you be more specific than that? Because I'm curious as what
sure.
this way and
like,
that way is.
For example, we had a policy that to get to, you know, administrative resources behind the firewalls, that you had to get on a VPN, whether or not you were on the network or not. And it was just the way, you know, we happened to do it for various reasons. And I said, you know what? I don't really buy that. Why don't we offer that solution, but we also offer VDI? And then they can go to a VDI server, which essentially becomes a jump host, and then they don't have to get on a VPN because the VPN essentially becomes the choke point. We had a really fast network. And then you've got this little VPN device that just negates all the speed that you have on this really, you know, amazingly fast network.
Did you have a means to enforce it such that they could only access via VPN, not because the written policy said so, because you were technically enforcing it? And the same thing with VDI. If they weren't going through a VPN tunnel, but you were letting them get on VDI, how did you enforce that that's the only thing they got to?
Yeah, I mean, well, they had to have an account, and they didn't have to be on a VPN to get to the remote desktop or VDI server. So if they wanted to go that way, they could just go that way. I mean, you had to be on the IP space of the network. If you were coming in from home, that was a totally different story. Then you had to use a VPN. If you were trying to go directly to the host, then the only access that was allowed through the firewall was from the VPN. So, you know, we did have ways of enforcing that. It was a bit duct tape, and I have, you know, and there was still some kludginess to it, but, you know, you wanted to provide some freedom so that they were your partners in the process and not just resistant and trying to get around it. Nothing's perfect, but I think those are the conversations that you have to start having. I think you have to – everybody has to come to the table to talk about it. I don't think it can be a dictatorship where you just say, no, we're not going to do BYOD. It just isn't going to work because people are going to do it whether you like it or not. I mean, just like the Fortinet survey said, you know, was it like – 1 out of 3 are going to do it, whether, you know, especially the younger workers.
Well, okay, so let's talk a little bit about that then. There's two things there, two things that I hear you saying. One is you've got VDI is probably the only viable BYOD solution. That means either using Citrix or some other virtual desktop where there's actually no data residing on the user's device. They have I think that's the only answer personally. I do not see how you can run Word on your local machine and run Microsoft Word on your home machine and then save files back to some drive share in the core or run an Exchange client on your laptop and have the data located locally. It's just the operating system support in Windows is not there to make that integrity, to keep any sort of integrity in place.
But VDI is not going to work for someone with a smartphone who wants to access corporate email.
That's what I was going to say. Is email should still be allowed through without the VDI. I hate attachments. If you're emailing documents and it's a document that has high sensitivity on it, there's no way in heck that should be sent across an email. Yeah. You cannot guarantee end-to-end security. I don't care who you are.
There are answers for that. So you can implement Exchange connectors over SSL with some persistence. So you can do native-based email, and that is supported on the iPhone using Active – I can't remember the name of the thing.
ActiveSync.
Yeah. So you can have SSL-enabled ActiveSync, which is secure. And then once it's on the iPhone device, it's certainly more secure than it is on any other product. So comparatively compared to, say, a RIM or a RIM has actually got a reasonably secure system, but it does a bitty bad job of handling Word documents. And Android, the data is not secure. You cannot secure an Android phone with data because it's always reachable, because it can always be rooted. Physical access to any device, including an iPhone, is always instant compromise. Right. So far, I think what we're hearing is that BYOD is really VDI, and that is either Citrix or Microsoft RDP terminal server or VMware using their – well, VMware's solution isn't viable for remote access because PCO over IP is not a viable remote access technology in my experience.
Well, Troy, what are you installing for people when they're asking for a BYOD solution? Because I would disagree and say it's not just VDI. There's other stuff out there.
I would agree with you, Ethan, and I'd take it back to it's a matter of looking at the value of the data to each individual customer or client. You know, having a VDI solution is fine, but if they're not if they shouldn't be viewing that data outside of their office environment, you need to look at restricting that as well. So it's how valuable is that information? Should they only be able to look at it while they're in their office environment? Should they not be able to view that data when they're at a coffee shop? For example, if you look at someone in the healthcare industry, doctor or a technician looking at x-rays or patient data at the coffee shop while they're sipping their latte, you know, that could have implications with HIPAA. You know, that information should only be, you know, viewed or looked at under, you know, special conditions in certain locations. So it's, you have to look at it more than just the VDI cloud and reference back to the policy and the value and the risk associated with that data loss. And that'll help guide you in terms of what devices you want to access, what resources those devices should have access to, and then what technologies you can bring to bear to implement a solution that that incorporates the vision and the corporate policy.
I mean, this is nothing new, really. I mean, what we're talking about, people have been playing fast and loose with, you know, corporate or government data as, you know, as long as there has been secrets in the world. It's just it's a matter of scale, really.
Yeah, I was going to say that exact same thing, Michelle, is that we've been dealing with this forever. It's blown out of proportion because now we're accessing it via all these mobile devices. We've always had this concern on a wired device. How many places can you walk into today that you talk to them about their wireless access and they'll say, oh yeah, it's WPA2 AES encryption with EP username authentications. Okay, let me plug into this wall jack. Now I'm on your network.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
You know, exactly. Yeah. We've always had this. The doctor sitting in the coffee shop on their laptop, we've always had that problem, whether they've been on VPN or not. And, you know, what we're doing for that is we're looking at the context-aware solutions, and those are coming into play with, like, Cisco ICE product or the Aruba ClearPass, where we can tell where the device is coming from. And like Troy said, then we can make the determination as to what they should actually be able to see. It's not so much as is the data trusted on the device all the time. It's whose eyes are looking at it. If I VPN from home, that doesn't mean that my wife or kid's not looking over my shoulder at this document. Now, granted, they're not going to say anything. You just never know.
Yeah, the identity services engine, Cisco ICE, was interesting. I went to one of the local Cisco campuses in my area and sat through pretty much a day-long demonstration of ICE, various aspects of it. It's so early on, it seemed the biggest thing it's supposed to do is identify what that device is that's connected to the network. I think it's an Android device because I saw thus and so in the browser HTTP request, and I saw this behavior, and I noticed this, and therefore there's a good probability that it's an Android device. So there's all these heuristics that ICE goes through to identify what that device is. Then, once it thinks it knows what the device is, a policy can then be applied to it. But I was a little put off by it, I guess, in that it's not a sure bet. It's a probability-based thing. It's probably this device.
Yeah, well, that's not anything new. I mean, Beacon has been doing that for a while. We actually had Beacon at the university. And, yeah, it's not perfect. It can go out and identify devices. It uses a combination of, I think, we used it. We were going to try and use it with the Juniper device, the IVE, and it can, between user, you know, the Juniper device identifying user agent strings, and then they use the MAC address and whatever.
That would be the Juniper and Cisco, you know, security platforms that use Java to install software.
Right.
Yeah. Super secure, guys. Go hard.
But, I think that's the future. Yeah, is it perfect? Is it kludgy? It's definitely kludgy. Is it perfect? No. But that has to be the future because it has to be context aware. I mean, there's just the kind of duct tape method where we manually identify all this stuff. It's just not realistic anymore. And we need to be working harder. And that's where we need to hold vendors accountable and start needing to come up with better solutions for this kind of thing.
And we don't need to hold vendors. It's not the vendor's fault. It's management fault. We need to say to our managers, you need to demand this from the vendors.
Okay.
And we don't manage the vendors. It's the managers who manage the vendors. The keys in manage, right?
That's fair because it's a lot of times what you'll hear from a vendor is, you know, you'll say, well, why doesn't your product do this? I mean, for example, the Cisco ACS, which doesn't talk SSL to a standard LDAP server, but it'll talk secure to an AD server. And you're like, well, that's where management has to come in and advocate for you and help you prove that there's a business case and that you need that functionality. Mm-hmm. I mean, otherwise, you know, they're going to vendors will inhabit that middle place of mediocrity and deliver just the bare minimum to us as technicals.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. BYOD is a failure. Again, I just want people to shift the idea of the conversation here because I've had some knock 'em down, drag 'em out arguments lately with people. But the reason we have BYOD is because management have failed to engage with the vendors to demand better answers. It's management failure that's put us here. It's not a technology failure. It's not an engineering failure. It's a failure of the business people to tell the business people to buck up and improve things. We're still sitting on Windows XP platforms because the business people aren't financing IT properly to go forward. I want to move the conversation on a little bit further and talk about networking issues, right? So I see the networking as actually having a couple of problems. One is, if you're talking about BYOD, and we're inherently going to be talking about three things. One is internet access from the home, which is largely free. People already have it, so it's not a problem. But what about people who are accessing corporate networks over 3G or LTE and paying for it themselves? What's that going to do to corporate budgets? Who's going to pay for user data when the person's bringing their own device along and paying? Now, 3G and LTE are moving to a per megabyte charging fee. So just about universally across the world, there are data caps at about 500 megabytes to a gigabyte per account for a reasonable fee. What happens when corporate data blows out that budget to an exchange? Somebody sends a Word document, which is 50 megs in size, and they email it back and forwards 8 times, and that's the budget for the month gone. Who's going to pay for that data?
Well, right now I think corporations are sort of ignoring it, and they're expecting users to pay for it. Well, where it used to be, I remember when I first started the university, they used to give you a budget for internet connectivity because they expected you to be 365 24/7. Then they started to inch back on that because they said, well, everybody has internet access. It's just a part of life now. And I think that's the future, that they're going to be that. I mean, I'm hearing companies even talk about that they're no longer doing, you know, individual expenses with people anymore. They're just giving them a budget and they're expecting them to adhere to the budget that they're provided. I think that it's going to get worse for the user community, and that they're going to just be expected to front a lot of the costs themselves.
I disagree with that one. Sorry, Ethan, I got to jump
go
in
ahead, go
that
ahead.
One. From my side of the fence, being as at companies and then being in a consulting role, if I use, you know, when I start my first day at work, you're either asked, would you like to use your own phone or would you like to have a corporate issued phone? The caveat being that if you use a personal phone, you are 24/7, 365 available. But then you're also, their next question is, how much do you pay? Okay, well, our plan is X. So if their plan is $75 and your plan is $85, they'll give you the $75. You need to manage that account. You need to manage that usage. If you go above and over because it is your personal device, anything above that $75, you're eating that cost, yes. But that's then on the employee to manage that because they are using their device so that they have their same number so they're not carrying two phones or
telling people. So how do you think the managers are going to cope when this guy, when that person who was using $75 a month on a corporate plan suddenly changes from a sales support role to being a salesperson who's completely mobile and now they need to uprate their phone to, you know, three times the bandwidth? Do you think we're going to have processes for that? Do you think people are going to work that out?
I do. If you look at the software packages available today that can help manage those expenses and help, you know, track some of that, such as the mobile Ryan application. But, you know, when you talk mobile device management, it's not just security. It's not just onboarding, how to get all these devices onto your wireless and everything. Some of these solutions also will manage and audit bills. Can you make an international call? Can you do international roaming? Can you roam from this carrier to this carrier? There's a lot of data points in there that nobody ever really talks about because I think it's kind of one of those unknowns. Like you said, that, you know, people just don't know exactly where that's at yet. But we do have the ability to track those statistics anyways and develop. I know everybody hates the word policy because if you can't enforce a policy, it's worthless. But it does come down to it. And Greg, to your point, yes, we need management that can actually follow through on policies.
That's, I mean, what you're saying so much isn't just policy. You're saying that it takes somebody with a degree of vision and engagement who wants to sit down and actually plan a strategy. I mean, we use the blanket term of policy, but what we mean is that somebody's going to have to get out of their little, you know, prison of denial and actually start just admitting that BYOD is reality and that we need to start planning for it and deal with it. And, you know, most people, I think, I'm betting that most people buy some of these MDM solutions, use it for the security aspect, the remote wiping aspect, and then they don't even get into the granular aspects of the application.
Yes.
There's some
That's
corporations, though, that they are not going to say BYOD is here and we're just going to deal with it and find a solution, a technical solution to support it and secure it. They're going to say, I came from a company once upon a time where there was no wireless allowed, period. No wireless access points. And in fact, we would go around and hunt for rogues and then boot them off the network if we found someone using them. I mean, it was that draconian of a policy. It wasn't just no BYOD. It was no wireless either. And so there was a very regimented and strict policy that the company had. Well, why did they have that policy? Well, the nature of the data that company dealt with was such that they deemed it too risky to provide any sort of network access beyond a very strictly controlled and tightly defined wired infrastructure, only accessed by devices that the corporation provided. Again, a financial services infrastructure. And right or wrong, we've somewhat argued that for the whole show about whether that's right or wrong. I believe the corporation had that right as the corporation, a self-determining organization, to set that policy. And I don't think everyone's just going to up and say, yep, we're going to do BYOD and we got to just get a hold of this thing and deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, the CIO that I deal with is like, well, we have some people asking for it. It's not a big deal right now, but what we want to be able to do is provide a secure solution. And he said, I want to make sure that you know, people aren't walking out the building with data stored on the system. I want to make sure that we can identify what the device is and make sure we can contain it appropriately and give them a limited access, not full access. Because we don't own that device and can't manage that device. So we want to accommodate the users, but we want to do it in a reasonable way. And until we can do that, I'm going to tell them no, and I have no problem with that. So it's really – I think the philosophy is widely ranging.
Yeah, then you get into the government where it's just absurd, the level of – I mean, they're not dealing with it. That's the that's what it gets into. It's complete denial. Where I read an article about Chris Segoyan and some of the other people who were at the FTC trying to work, you know, with privacy issues, and they couldn't even access the websites that they needed to access in order to do the research that they needed to do. And the FTC, the IT department would not work with them. They had to go to a lab if they wanted to, you know, use iPhones or something like that. They're still handing out Blackberries at the FTC. And, you know, it was just absurd.
I think there's a point here I want to make that's really a large point, that is, a corporation can dictate what they think a securities policy needs to be because of the nature of the data that they're responsible for. So a friend of mine does Department of Defense contracting for a branch of the United States military. The rules that are placed upon him, what he can access the network with, it's extremely tight. It's BYOD, not even a thought in his head. And in the concrete bunker he's located in, quite literally, he has no wireless cell phone signal whatsoever. No 3G, no nothing. Well, why? Why is that? Is it because they're scared, and it's kind of a silly, overblown perception of the way security needs to be? Well, no, it was deemed necessary because of the nature of that network. And I think financial institutions tend to be, you know, in the same boat. They're a target. They got a big target painted on them because they may house your credit card information, let's say, and someone's hoping to, or at least credit card information is passing through that network, and so they are hoping to get in there somehow and be able to pull some of that data off. And of course, there's been many data breaches recently, within recent years, recent memory certainly, of exactly that happening. So I think.
But I don't really see them actually classifying the data. It seems to be complete FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, that where they're not really, you know, okay, the U.S. government has, you know, infinite resources, or so it seems, you know, our tax dollars. But, I mean, what I see is that they don't really look at the data. I mean, I don't think where I'm working now, I brought up recently our lack of a data classification matrix, and you know, I got, wow, how did you come up with that? And I'm like, dude, it's in the CISSP book.
So I mean, we're talking a lot about policy and, you know, how we solve the challenges around data classification, things like that. What about are we saying that the technology to support BYOD is here? Like, the other issue that I have listed as a technical challenge is wireless device density. For example, I was recently at a company where we put up a guest wireless network, and it was really just put together as a bit of a thing, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And then when we actually looked at it, we found that for 300 people in the building, there was over 1,200 devices connected to the wireless. And yep. It turns out that everybody had a personal phone, a work phone, and an iPad and a laptop. And, you know, it wasn't uncommon for people to have two and possibly up to four devices per person. And the guest wireless, you know, obviously wasn't able to cope with that. And, I mean, wireless device density, I think, could be solved once it's deployed. I mean, are there any technical limitations to supporting BYOD? Are we able to authenticate and identify people correctly? Are we able to manage data on devices? Is it really all about policy? Is that just the thing about BYOD, is it's a management problem?
Don't you think the technology – I mean, right now, if we start to embrace it a little more, I think the technology is going to get better, because there will be a financial incentive for the vendors to start pushing the limits of that farther out. I mean, what I'm seeing now is that there's no real onus on – I mean, they're doing a kind of a middling job at best. But I think we as users can – provide an incentive for them to start, you know, providing better solutions.
Yeah, technology is there. You know, one of the things that I find funny is, for better or worse, depending on what your take is of this as a company, Meraki for wireless solutions, they've had kind of mobile device management, mobile application management light, let's call it, in their GUI for quite some time already. We have the Cisco ICE coming out with a 1.2. Very soon here, that is going to have onboarding on it. We've got the Aruba ClearPass solution. There's MobileEye, and there's you know, countless numbers of third-party software applications out there that assist with the technology for bringing these devices on. I truly do believe that it comes down to is the policy and whether or not you have a technology solution in place that can enforce the policy if you have lackluster management or executive teams.
I think we have to be a little careful with some of these solutions as they can build a false sense of security. I think Ethan hit the nail on the head there when he said that these devices such as ICE, they build a confidence or probability that this device is the device that it is. It's looking at things like the device host name, the MAC address, details of the user agent profile, and the DHCP request to help identify which particular device that it is. But it's definitely not an absolute, and so we need to be aware of that, that it gives us a confidence of what device that we're letting onto the network. And so if we're going to give that particular device access to very sensitive data, we need to be very confident that we know what that device is.
See, I'm a little bit, you know, I used to be in that same fence because I'd look at it and say, okay, MAC address, I can spoof that. Host name, I can spoof that. User agent, I can spoof it. So now my probability has changed. How many of us, though, is going to change a laptop to look like an iPad? Because most likely your laptop is going to have higher access rights than an iPad is. Would you not agree there?
Most likely, yeah. Most likely that would be the case.
Well, so it would need more access rights because you can do more on a laptop than you can on an iPad. Right? So an iPad so the data mode for an iPad is largely a consumption. That's not to say you can't use it for creation. It's just not optimized for content creation. So if you want to write a Word document, an iPad's not the best platform. If you want to fill out a purchase order, an iPad's a perfect platform because it can be done on the spot. So I don't see iPads as needing a lot of rights because it's solving a different problem.
Correct. So that's where I see the whole hoopla about security. It's kind of one of those, is it really a big deal or not?
I think security, it tends to be the FUD term that everybody throws out to sort of silence the room from having the discussion. Oh, but what about security?
Yes.
And you're like,
that's been the case for years.
Yeah, and everybody shuts up. It's like saying, rat.
Yes. <You know? laughs> And I regard security probably, the state of IT security is probably the biggest management failure in IT today.
I would agree.
Managers don't understand IT security or what it means or how to implement it or anything. They're not equipped to cope with security, and so they don't.
I don't think a lot of security people understand security. They rely on spreading FUD and the boogeyman. That's what security people think.
Again, I'm going to blame manager on this. Management aren't providing leadership to security people to say, this is how we turn this into a business issue. Security people are expected to interpret business practice into security deliverables. So you're asking a technologist to interpret business. You're taking this really bright person who's really detail focused and asking him to apply broad ranging interpretations of business.
I'm not going to let technology people off the hook. If they don't have some understanding of business, of making business cases, of collecting metrics to provide a justification for things, if they're not partners with management,
absolutely.
Then I have.
So my problem is not the technical people being partners. My problem is the management people aren't being partners.
I think it should be an equal partnership.
Right now I'm seeing an awful lot of people being quick to blame the techies for not being business savvy, and I'm sitting there saying, hang on, I'm seeing the business people not be tech savvy. So I want to one of the other points, I'm going to get off my high horse again. I'm going to put my unicorn aside there and just get down and walk away from that one again. I also wonder how much BYOD will actually happen. So here's a theory for you. We're hearing a lot of noise about BYOD. And that's because I envisage that BYOD is largely driven by the power users, and particularly the nerds like us. So people who actually have a passion for doing a good job, the people who are bright enough and intelligent enough to master their own technology. And I have sort of a theory that that's less than, okay, I'll be really generous, 5% of the workforce has actually got that ability to do that. Are we really going to implement these BYOD technologies for a vanishingly small percentage of the workforce?
I would disagree with that. I think what I saw, is, and I continue to see, and you hear about it all the time, is that the worst BYODers are the people in power and not the power users.
Yeah, the incompetent managers.
Oh my God. Yeah. I see that all the time. And you know, it never failed at the university. They'd say, oh my gosh, we have to support this new device because so-and-so member board of trustee member has it.
Yep.
You know, and you'd have to support it. And a lot of the people who are bringing Macs to my new environment are managers and people in power. And I think it'll be a combination of power users, people in power. And I think at some point, BYOD isn't even going to be a discussion. It's going to be reality. And that's just the way it is.
Well, the younger generation as well. The 20-somethings are all very keen right. on this. I think, Michelle, maybe you were making that point earlier in the podcast. That's another group that's driving, seems to be driving this whole thing because of it's an expectation, it's an entitlement. I was reading an article that described it as the younger generation doesn't know a world without the internet. It's kind of all around them in the air. They can go to Starbucks and get on the wireless and hop on the internet and do their thing, and they expect that that's just normal life. That's just the way it is.
You guys have young kids. I mean, and then you hear these. I hear these stories all the time. Not being a breeder myself, where you know, you'll hear about somebody 2 year old.
You're not fecund. Sorry. That word burst into my mind. I have no idea why, but there you go. A breeder.
Where, you know, some 2 year old has figured out how to use an iPad better than they can. And it's like their brains, the neuroplasticity of a 2 year old or a 3 year old in how they relate to technology is going to be so far beyond what we even can comprehend. Technology is so going to shift the way that we interact with each other, the way we interact with the world, that I don't think BYOD is even going to be a conversation anymore. It's like you're going to, you know, every kid's going to have an iPad or a tablet of some kind, and you won't even think of saying, no, you can't bring that device on our network.
That's 15, 20 years away. Who cares about them?
Oh, I don't think it's 15,
is the security overblown? Is the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, the security issues, is that really overblown then? Because, yes, we say security. I mean, that's what this whole conversation is. If it wasn't about security concerns, BYOD wouldn't matter, and we would have all been doing it for years. So why don't corporations, as a general rule, allow BYOD? Well, security, I would say, is probably at the top of the list, and then it goes from there with supportability being another huge one. Are we really overblowing the security concerns?
I think it's real, but I think we have to stop. We have to stop thinking about it like the boogeyman and actually address it. Like, you know, you don't, you know, the way you do with your house, the way you secure your home. You don't say, "Oh, I might get robbed," and then you don't lock your doors or buy an alarm system. I mean, just you have to sit down. You know, look at the threats, the vulnerability, calculate the risk, you know, it doesn't have to be an advanced risk analysis, but
you hit it though, I think right there, which is there is a security issue, but it is about mitigating the risk. What's the scenario? What's the likelihood of it happening? Are we willing to take on that amount of risk? And what do we do to try to mitigate that risk? And then if a breach happens, let's say, malware gets on the network because someone walked in with their horrible Android device that was infected with who knows all sorts of horrible things that then got into the network from there. Or someone walks out of the building with their own device and it's got a bunch of data on it that's corporate and private and confidential. And then that device gets stolen. And we're assuming that whoever stole it cares about the data that's on it. They probably don't. But let's say they did it because it was a targeted attack. If you understand those risks and then are willing to take those risks on, knowing that you've got a strategy to mitigate those risks, BYOD becomes a lot less scary. But I think there's still some organizations, like I was talking earlier about banks, the military, and so on, that may say, no matter what, under no circumstances are they going to do BYOD.
And sure, maybe the military has the resources to enforce that. Does most small to medium business have the resources to enforce that? Probably not. So invite the BYOD issue to the table, talk about it, plan for it, you know, actually strategize for it. I mean, because if you don't, then they're doing it anyway. and you're just ignoring it.
Okay. Actually, you just brought back to my mind a more practical question that Greg had brought up earlier. We didn't really dive into it too much. Troy, I'll ask you this. As you're going into companies that are wanting to do BYOD, what do their wireless deployments look like? Are they ready to take on a whole bunch of additional wireless devices, or is that part of why you're there?
I would say on a large part, a lot of them aren't. You know, they compare it to their Wi-Fi at home, where they've gone to Best Buy or Fry's or Future Shop and picked up their D-Link special and take it at home. They don't understand why wireless would be so complex or why they need so many access points. And then you start to explain to them the differences between density and the requirements of a voice application versus location. Real-time location tracking systems and how that impacts the layout of their access points and the density of their access points. And it starts to go over their heads. So I don't think they fully appreciate the capabilities that the wireless brings to their environment and what the implications of running different applications are across that. And then you start talking to them about BYOD and start talking about security and restricting and controlling devices. And I think a lot of their eyes glaze over.
And it doesn't have to be businesses like that. I mean, at the university, BYOD hit us like, you know, it was like a wrestler throwing us to the mat and sitting on top of our chest. I mean, it just came. It seemed like it came out of nowhere and just like immobilized us. We were so ill prepared, and
it did come out of nowhere. It's called the iPad, the launch of the first iPad.
Oh, we were, and the university I worked for was actually written up as being that we refused to allow iPads on our network, and it wasn't that we refused them. We were written up multiple newspapers about this. What happened was we couldn't allow them on our network because of the way we allowed access to our wireless network. And it was humiliating. So, it's better to start the discussion now because big organizations aren't prepared, much less smaller ones.
I absolutely agree. Like BYOD, it's coming. The sooner we can start the discussion, start building an architecture that'll support that, so we're not piecemealing it after the fact, the better off corporations will be.
Well, I mean, so many of these consumer apps are better than the corporate apps. So, for example, you look at Dropbox. I can share data in a Dropbox. Like, for example, Ethan and I use it to exchange data backwards and forwards quite reasonably. Now, I can drop a file into a folder, and it will appear on his desktop quite reliably. Every time. I can have it on multiple computers in multiple places, and it costs almost nothing. And this is the other challenge of BYOD, which is probably a whole discussion in its own self. But if I go into a company, I'm sitting there going, you know, if I could just do this on Dropbox, it would be easier than using a file share. I don't have to hassle about all of this rubbish of /this, you know, and then 140 characters later, I'm finally in a drive. You know, I'm in Microsoft Finder searching for a folder and then creating a shortcut and dragging it to a desktop so I can find the bloody folder again because it's buried under some cryptic hierarchy.
Well, Microsoft has SharePoint.
Stop. I think I just about
wow,
died
did anybody,
there.
Boy, that was bad. Nobody took this.
Yeah, everybody was just throwing up a little in their mouths. You know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, people are measuring corporate IT against their consumer experiences. And to be fair, the consumer experiences are really, really good. And corporate IT is going to be shaken to its core by that, I think, in my view, because I look at the iPhone and the experience I have with that, and now I look at Windows XP with 4 gigs of RAM on a 4-year-old laptop and go, that user experience is just a shockingly bad.
Well,
and
it's about damn time.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they doing? It's time for a revolution of this. And, you know, like Avaya came out with that ridiculous Flare tablet that was $2,500 and you can get a beautiful iPad for far less than that. Did they really think that was going to work?
Yes, they really did.
What kind of delusion, you know, mass corporate delusion?
Have you ever asked yourself how much markup they make for a telephone on someone's desk?
Oh, God.
You know those phones that go on people's, you know, those Avaya handsets or the old Nortel, you know, whatever it is? They cost less than $10 to make those.
I'm
and
nuts.
They sell them for $500 a place. That includes
your
user
license. 6 1535s, the Nortel video phones, I'll sell you for $50.
Yeah. But, I mean, seriously, I mean, you look at a Cisco IP phone, how much do they cost per unit?
Yes.
And how much do you think they cost to manufacture? Do you think that the cost of a, you know, a cost of a Cisco IP video phone is $400, $450 on the street? You can buy an iPad for $600. Do you think that people don't measure the two and say, well, why am I buying a Cisco phone? So, you know.
Well, not all Cisco phones cost that much, but yes.
Well, one that's video enabled.
User expectation.
Yeah.
How the user perceives their experience is what's driving BYOD, driving the consumerization of IT, all the latest buzzwords. It's users are much more savvy, like Michelle, you mentioned, that the younger generation, they're tapped in 24/7. They're always on the internet. I mean, my daughter, she's 3. She doesn't look at a board game and say game. She sees the iPhone. She goes, oh, I want to play a game. You know, that's their mentality. Technology is 100% around them, and we've enabled that through how we, as the power users in IT, had to keep up with technology and constantly have all these different devices. If the user experience is going to be better for them, you have to imagine that at the end, the morale of the employee is going to be higher, productivity is going to be higher, and you're going to get a better return on your investment that is in that employee. You know, that's, for me, that's where it comes down to with the BYOD.
Yeah, I think it's not just that. I think, you know, they've done these studies on you know, what chemically happens in the brain when you get a tweet. You know, and that your dopamine, you get this like firing of dopamine every time you send a tweet with the expectation that you're going to get a tweet back. So it's a feedback loop of dopamine, the wanting, and then the opioid response, the liking. Ah, so we, with technology, we are creating this new way of interacting with it that is just, you're not going to be able to, it's too late. The cat's out of the bag. Pandora's box is open. We are evolving in, you know, to a different kind of hybrid age, and there's no way of rolling that back. And we either, BYOD, it's not a question of should we or shouldn't we BYOD allow it. It's, we better start doing something now or we're going to be in big trouble. As an industry, we need to invite everybody to the table and start coming up with much better solutions, or it's going to be chaos.
You know, when you're saying that bit about Twitter and dopamine and all that, I could not stop myself from firing up Hootsuite to check my Twitter. I had to get a hit. Oh, I haven't checked it for a while. I better look and see. I wonder if anyone sent me a message. I need to go look right now.
Oh, we're starting up Twitter
Anonymous.
If I only
had you an MRI, darn it.
Proof people are addicted to Twitter.
Yes, but the hipsters go to IRC, right?
That's right. Yeah. IRC.freenode.net. Please join the Packet Pushers channel. We'd be delighted to see you.
I hate gamification. I hate this whole gamification thing. It's like, you know, if you do this, we'll give you that. We'll give you a point. You know, the four-square check-in. You can be the mayor of the toilet at work. I mean, being the mayor of a cheesecake restaurant in your local town, I mean, that's a real achievement. I mean, what can I say?
Chocolate factory.
Eh?
Just for that, I'm going to go plus one something of yours on Google Plus, Greg.
That's yeah. Right.
I mean, at least plus one would be like, you know, something that somebody – well, I don't know. I mean
– what's everybody's clout score?
Oh, God.
I deleted my cloud account, I'll help you know.
Yeah, and oh. I –
Ethan's in denial.
Yes, I did too.
Denial. I played that game. I went there. I played that game. I gamed it for a month or so. I was very popular about unicorns. I was an influencer. And after that, it just got silly. And I got the score up to, I don't know, nothing huge. And then said, okay, I'm done now.
Yeah.
I don't want them knowing that much about me, which Greg and I talked about on a show at some point. It got creepy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, being influential about unicorns was pretty hysterical.
When Gartner does a magic quadrant on unicorns, then it's time to call it a day.
Well, I am working on the packet pushers graph of adoption, and it'll be out shortly. But there's that. So I want to come back to some final questions on the BYOD thing for a bit. One part about BYOD is, do you think users will be responsible for their data usage? Are they actually going to be able to do that?
Meaning the amount of bits they're putting through their device?
Well, I think if you make people – if people are able to bring their own device, are they actually grown up enough to make intelligent adult decisions about usage and taking responsibility for themselves and supporting it themselves?
Probably not.
I think people will do what's convenient.
Yeah, and I think
that's paying my bills.
I think the data limits are going to be eventually – they're going to be like remember AOL in the early days when you were charged per minute or something, or based on the time you were on. I think, and that went away. I think it's going to be a combination of we're going to police it a little bit, and then those data limits are going to get bigger and eventually fade away.
I would actually agree with that statement too. Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, with users having to pay their own bills, I think they'll be a little more data conscious about how much data they're pulling down.
Yeah, I think they're going to be the ones that are going to go and say, why'd you send me that 8 meg Word attachment when you could have put it in a Dropbox and I could have accessed it when I was ready to?
Yeah. You also see, like, in up in Canada, like, we have Shaw Cable Systems, which abandoned their plan to roll out a cell deployment in Western Canada and change it to service provider Wi-Fi. So in Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver, they're deploying municipal Wi-Fi. So eventually there'll be large pockets of Wi-Fi coverage where you can offload your data usage onto to a free hotspot if you're a Shaw customer. And so if you have that option, it saves you the charge of downloading data.
I mean, AT&T's handing out microcells, and you see femtocells around for backhaul. Maybe those will become more prevalent. So people, something's got to change. When they're making commercials mocking, when the vendors make commercials mocking the data plans, then something has to change. It's just too much of an embarrassment, and it will continue to be an embarrassment as, applications become more hungry. I mean, look at Retina, the Retina display. Mm-hmm. You're not going to make this content less piggy with that kind of display.
So I think that BYOD presumes that users are intelligent and motivated and willing to do it, and my experience is that that's not necessarily true.
I think that'll be generational, though. I think those dinosaurs will fade away. They're going to have to. They're going to
Okay,
retire.
So I understand what your point is, but I'm looking on a 3-year horizon. I've got projects which have to push a return to the business within 3 years. So if I'm going to deploy BYOD, I have to go out and buy an identity management solution. So ISE, I have to buy tokens. I have to buy asset management because I have to or data management or data security management or risk management platforms that tracks all that data that's now out in the field. I'm going to have to boost my help desk because I'm going to have to support iPhones, iPads, Androids, BlackBerry tablets, Microsoft Surface tablets, all of them. And then I'm going to have Macs, MacBooks. I'm going to have iMacs. I'm going to have all these things are going to be running something that accesses my internal systems. I'm going to have VPN. All these things that we already do, all of these things are going to go on top of that. So where's the funding going to come? And if only a small number of people, say 5% of the workforce, picks up on this BYOD, it won't be a success because the money will have been spent for not enough gain.
I have to disagree with the hiring more help desk. A lot of the companies that we've worked with they put it in place that if you bring your own device, expect no level of support other than once you access the application that is accessing our infrastructure. So if it's a Citrix deployment, they'll support the Citrix session, but they don't support the device.
Yeah, that's what we do.
The way that is in a lot of places. We come back to the EDU, they've been doing this for years.
Yep, that's exactly what we did.
Very minimal help desk staff.
Yeah, but in EDU, you're not a
problem.
Yeah, but that's not going to work in a corporate environment that's...
Oh, yeah, it has. It's been working.
It'll be easier because at the university when they spent – so I worked at a private university that had one of the highest tuitions in the country, and we would frequently get calls from students or parents saying, do you know how much I spend to go here and you're telling me blah, blah, blah? And we still won that battle. So I think the battle will be somewhat easier in corporate.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be so ecstatic that they actually don't have to have this crap top HP thing from, that's so under spec and underpowered and, a dinosaur to use.
They don't have drivers from 10 years ago.
Right.
It's there's lower cost with helpdesk. I would stand by that statement 100%.
All right. Well, I'm dubious. I doubt it.
You can also have the hybrid.
And that's why we're here.
To watch Greg be dubious.
There's also the hybrid solution where you support one particular corporate platform, for example, BlackBerry, but still allow users to bring in their own device. So you have official support for one device and then tell users who want to bring any other device that they're on their own. And you sort of get a little bit of both worlds.
Yeah, so I was talking to our Juniper SE the other day, and he was telling me that, you know, every year they have those big national meetings where they all go out to Silicon Valley. Now, the official laptop is an IBM ThinkPad. When they were having the presentation, the guy on stage made a note that all he saw out in the audience were MacBooks.
Yep.
He didn't see any of the IBM ThinkPads.
No. Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, Cisco doesn't officially support the Apple laptops, but how many of the Cisco employees that you know are using Apple laptops now?
Exactly.
People are going to use what they want to know how to use because they can support themselves. Then they don't have to call that help desk until at the very last minute when it's something they can't do, like a username issue or password issue.
So when Cisco and Juniper and some of these other companies give us suboptimal MDM and BYOD solutions, we should point them to their own staff and say, you know what? Cut it out. You can't even make your own employees comply with your standards, so you need to get off your butts and start working on better solutions.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we've beat this topic up pretty well. Gosh, looking at the recording time, I think we're into 80 or 90 minutes or so. And I think we've hit on just about everything, at least policy-wise. Some people were listening to the show. If they've actually listened in this far and gotten to this point, maybe they're a little disappointed that we didn't get into anything technical. This is all very, very philosophical and very high level and very policy and these sorts of things that we discuss, as opposed to BYOD, let's assume it's here and here's how you implement it. Maybe that's a different show we can do another time, but tell you what, why don't I go around the table here and just get an update on everybody of what you're planning on doing this upcoming week, and plug your Twitter handles and your blogs if you like, and then we'll sign out. And Troy, why don't we start with you?
All right. This week, I guess I'll be putting together a high-level design for a Cisco ICE deployment to support BYOD, as well as troubleshooting customer networks who aren't able to authenticate their wireless clients because the radius certificate expired. If you want to get a hold of me or follow me, I'm available on the Twitter at TroyMart, just like Walmart, but better. And hopefully I'll be able to post some guest blogs on packet pushers in the near future.
Yeah, if we haven't signed you up already, just send me an email and we will do that, because I am actually very keen to see what your experience is with Cisco ICE.
Oh, ditto. I'd love to see that, yeah.
And Blake, you, sir?
This week I'll be hopefully rebuilding an office while working on a few RTLS deployment issues. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, Blake Crony, and then the BlakeCrony.com is my blog, as well as the NoStringsAttachedShow.com.
Awesome. Michelle, what are you up to in this week's world of financial service provision?
Oh, God. Still working on that. I'm caught in the vortex of a forklift application that does network management. And it's just – I mean, you can imagine all the ACLs and the firewall rules and the routing changes. It's just – it's a nightmare.
So you're actually replacing one management platform with another?
No, they're trying to implement one. They had been using Rancid to some degree, and I think we're all familiar with the joys of using Rancid for configuration management. But they're trying to replace it with a commercial app which does configuration management, but also some provisioning, automated provisioning, and it's just a challenge because I don't think they were prepared for the level of care and feeding that an application like this requires. And I've been trying to let them know about that. And I've been troubleshooting it and with people. It's taking a cast of thousands already.
Of course, you're blogging at packetpushers.net, and your Twitter is at Mrs. Y is Y, yes?
Yes, it is.
All right. Greg, what are you up to this week over in the very rainy UK, last I looked?
Yeah, it's still wet, and it's still miserable. And I expect a thoroughly miserable week ahead doing some working with a bunch of managers. What more do I need to say? I expect to be led by incompetent, bumbling idiots and be working closely with my secretarial staff in the form of project managers, making some sort of strategic stuff up. It's all confidential. I can't really say much about it. So, but you can find me raving even more than I did today, chasing unicorns and wishing that things were better than they were on my blog at etherealmind.com. And for those of you who don't know, I've also been putting I've been documenting some of my OS X experiences over on my personal blog, which is gregferro.com. Feel free to drop by. I also post off topic there, where I post videos that take my fancy from the YouTubes and the Vimeos and other sort of personal observations. And if you're interested, maybe you could follow me along there.
And I am Ethan Banks, at EC Banks on Twitter, and this week I'm going to be working on a Nexus 5500 with FEX deployment. I've got rack layouts I need to do to figure out where I'm going to rack some equipment. Then I got to get a bunch of fiber optic cables ordered, do some more plumbing, and then turn up the brand new 10 gig network and start plugging people in, about which I am just very, very excited. Because once that is done, that means I get to start working on a Cisco voice over IP deployment, because I have to build QoS end-to-end over the entire infrastructure, because today it has exactly nothing related to QoS. I have to do it all. All right. Very exciting stuff.
You're dead to me.
And to you.
Dead to me.
Yeah. And to you that are out there listening, thank you so much for listening to the show this week. And you can follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter at Packet Pushers. And hang out with the listeners on IRC. I mentioned it a little earlier in the show, irc.freenode.net, in the Packet Pushers channel. Visit packetpushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers community and subscribe to our RSS feeds. And if you like, donate to the show. Email your comments or questions about this show to packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.